Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Richard Bergeron. We'll be joined by Tony the Tornado Pentacal in a little while, and Psychic Tom Padgett any minute now. We got a big show coming your way. Got a lot of information to share, a lot of highlights from last week's events, and of course, big stuff to talk about this week, a huge week in boxing, lots of fights going on. A big one that comes to mind is Sergey Kovalev taking on Jean Pascal in Montreal, Pascal's hometown, so big fight there. Also, Steve Cunningham fighting this weekend, a heavyweight bout. We also have Spike TV's debut with Free Boxing. The Premier Boxing Champions series that just debuted on NBC. And here's Psychic Tom.
All right, buddy. Here we go. Lots to talk about. So where to begin, huh? Where to begin?
Well, I was just bringing up Free TV, Boxing Return, and Boxing's Return to Free TV, I should say. Big NBC debut, a lot of personalities. Leila Ali, BJ Flores, all the way up to Al Michaels and Marv Albert. I'm sure you've been one or two. Really a pretty seamless broadcast as far as the commentary and support team. Big Robert Guerrero fan, unfortunately, not the best night to watch in action, but a lot of heart.
Yeah, I think with that one, the judges got the right guy, but I didn't see it quite as one-sided as they had it. I mean, I think Robert picked up a few rounds, and I think a few judges had him pitching, Thurman pitching a shutout, which I didn't see. But fortunately, they got the right guy.
I mean, basically, I think it was a great matchup of styles. You know, what's going to happen here? You have a pure southpaw boxer versus a one-punch-at-a-time brawler. And, you know, Robert had a chance, but I noticed he was slapping his punches a lot, especially towards the end. I mean, he was landing, but he just that was the difference between the two of them. I mean, obviously, Robert threw a lot more punches, I think, in that fight, but when Thurman was throwing, he was landing. He was very accurate, and he wasn't slapping his punches. He was turning them over, and he was coming off the back foot with his right hand, and doing everything right that you're supposed to do against the southpaw. But Guerrero just seemed to be just arm-punching a lot, not following through, there's no power. He hasn't learned to put any power behind his punches, and Thurman, he's a knockout artist, so he was able to kind of use that to his advantage and just wait for opportunities to get those knockouts, and he almost did.
And you know, it seems to me, Rich, that the problem is, if you don't have a lot of pop in your punches, your opponent's going to let up a little bit and relax a little more, which affects the stamina issue. And the only way you can compensate for it is a lot of good movement, which Robert didn't have, so he was kind of outgunned on both counts, as I seen it.
Yeah, there were a lot of boos because, you know, Thurman realized that if Guerrero's coming on strong at the end, they're pretty much run. So what was an exciting fight turned into kind of a snooze fest at the end. But, you know, it was, if that's what's to come, I'm in. I'm all in for free TV boxing.
And the first fight we had our share of boos too, didn't we?
Yeah, Adrian Broner, I mean, he's got that Floyd Mayweather style. He particularly mimics a lot of Floyd's defensive style. So, yeah, you're going to have a boring fight. John Molina Jr., I mean, he was basically pissed after the fight in the post-fight interview. He's just like, you know, I thought the guy was going to stand there and fight me.
First off, you know, I love John Molina. I mean, he's an old school guy. He brings it, but come on now. you can't agree to the style before the fight. You know, and I, for the life of me, I don't know where he got the idea that Broner was going to stand there and trade punches with him. I think Broner just knew that, hey, I cannot skill this guy, I cannot technique him, so why in the heck should he stand there and risk getting knocked out? John Molina hits hard.
Yeah. Last time I heard of Broner was when guys supposedly agreeing to how a fight was going to go down was it was Tim Sylvia versus the great boxer there, Lee Mercer.
Yeah.
A freak fight there.
How'd that work out? You know? The only other minor criticism I may have, I think I didn't care for the walkout situation. That seemed a little I don't know. I mean, kind of like I'm more of a traditionalist. It's just nice to come out with your team, and you know, and a lot of the guys on the underground kind of felt the same way. But hey, we'll take what we can get. And we've got more free stuff coming up.
Yes, on Spike TV this weekend, we'll get to that. Got a quick mixed martial arts story. We talked about Emmanuel Newton losing to Liam McGeary last week, but what we didn't know is there might have been a reason Newton was a little off his game.
I heard about that. Maybe that's where some of these, the universe set this up. Maybe that's where some of those sayings come from, huh?
I was always calling him the drunken master. I guess I'm going to have to call him the high master from now on.
Yeah.
He tested positive for marijuana, and this is kind of the initial report that came out is kind of interesting because it doesn't just mention that he tested positive. According to the expert from the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations, Mohegan Sun, I guess, in Connecticut, where they have the fight. They have their own tribe thing overseeing this. But apparently they have a setup for a therapeutic use exemption for medical marijuana. First I've ever heard of that.
Well, no, I didn't follow through on the details of the whole thing, and I know that Newton is from a state that allows medical marijuana, so I don't know. Did he have a permit for it medically, or do you know?
Well, he never sought one, but I mean,
this should be like on the top of Nick Diaz's research list here. So how is he going to fight? If he's ever going to fight again, I guess he's got to fight in Connecticut.
Well, yeah.
License.
Because, I mean, really, the last time I was out in California, summer of 2013, and Venice Beach, as you're walking up and down the beach, there's nothing but little corner walk-in clinics. Need your marijuana permits? Come on in. $30. Walk out the door. So it's not like they're impossible to get.
Right, yeah.
And if you're too stoned to get off the couch and do it, maybe you shouldn't be a fighter. Maybe you should look for another occupation, you know.
It's interesting to know that, too, because, I mean, if you're the UFC and you're supposed to know what commission does what, I mean, who would have made so much more business sense to book Nick's fight at Mohegan Sun?
Yeah.
And, it's almost guaranteed you're going to pop positive for that, you know, so.
Yeah.
Get him leaked, set him up, you know, have him fight, and no big deal if he tests positive.
Well, I would think you'd probably be declaring that before the fight and before all the tests, so it would be no surprise.
Yeah, I mean, he has legitimate anxiety. I don't think he just likes being fined for not showing up to interviews. He really is afraid. But anyway, enough about Nick. Mark Munoz making the news. He's announcing his retirement after his next fight, saying he's going to take on Luke Barnett at UFC Fight Day 66 on May 23rd in the Philippines. His nickname is the Filipino Record Machine. So.
Okay. Because I know that they. I wouldn't be surprised to see them trot out Brandon Vera for that one also. I haven't seen the composition of the card, but that wouldn't surprise me either.
I got to interview Luke Barnett a little while back when he was on the show. He wasn't on the show then, but the show was being broadcast at the time I interviewed him, but the show was already done. He'd already filmed it.
You know, it seemed like Munoz had a really pretty good learning curve, because when he came around, I remember was watching the fight. In fact, I was sitting next to Forrest Petz, who'd been there before, and it was kind of interesting because I noticed Munoz was shooting in very ineffectively, and I said to Forrest, I says, "Well, how do you read that?" He says, "Oh, just, you know, sometimes when you're it's the first time in there, and you're going to just do something you feel comfortable with, even if it's not that effective." So Munoz didn't have a big toolbox then, but in fact, I believe that's the night he was knocked out by a head kick from Matt Hamill, if I remember right. But then he really seemed to be coming on more. I mean, he seemed to be well-rounding his game and everything else, but then he ran into a couple losses, you know, the most recent submission and the one before the knockout, and maybe he just feels it's it.
Yeah, and I say good riddance because he blocked me on Twitter. That's because I am sponsored.
Really? Oh, okay.
One of the only people on Twitter who blocked me. Actually, Dana White just blocked me again. It's kind of funny because Dana White, I've been followed and been blocked like 4 times, I swear. I don't know how I just keep able to refollow. It must be like a 30-day waiting period or something. I don't know. Well, I used to be. So he blocked me again the other day. I think it was after I suggested that they pay the guy in the Boston fight there who got screwed his win money. I guess he didn't like that, or didn't like my giant suck showing up on his feed. So he put the kibosh on that. But anyway. Yeah, Mark Munoz, I got nothing personal against him, really. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
He's all done. He wants to go out with a bang in his own home country, but he's facing a pretty tough kid. I mean, Luke Barnett, I mean, what a story behind that kid. I mean, something struck me about him, and I really wanted to interview him before I asked for it, because here's a kid who came from no fight training. You know, like a Dungeons & Dragons nerd type kid in a business suit decides he's going to take a lesson in MMA, and then next thing you know, he's on the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah. Quite a story.
Very talented on the show. Looked very good. But that lack of experience, I think, has caught up to him in certain situations. He hasn't fought a lot since this TV show, but this is a fight he can win. And, you know, even though the guy's fighting in his home country, he can definitely beat him up in front of those fans. So, if you want to go out like a champ, you're going to have to work hard for this one, Mark Munoz. But, yeah, he has had a pretty decent career. You know, can't knock a guy who's got who fought, given his best and fought at that level in the UFC. We haven't really talked about predictions for Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather because you're waiting on Tony's prediction, Tom. But I do have a prediction from Miguel Cotto, who's also got Freddie Roach in common. He's worked with Freddie Roach as a trainer. And, of course, because of that reason, Miguel is picking Manny Pacquiao. Mm-hmm. And he has the special privilege of having fought both Floyd and Manny. So, he should know. At the same time, you know, you've had different results, the same people that both of these guys have fought. Sometimes Floyd's decision looks better than Manny's decision over certain guys, but this one, Manny took him out, so one of his last knockouts. So obviously, Cotto's going to go with Pacquiao, if you compare it that way.
Yeah, but I think therein lies the problem. How long ago was that fight? Was that, what, 2009?
Right.
You see what I mean? You see where I'm going with this. I mean, if Manny had been knocking out guys consistently in the past couple of years, I'd feel a lot more excited about his chances. but
I don't know. I mean, I would say that above anything, Manny has wanted this fight more over the years. Totally wanted it more. And Floyd has done the majority of the ducking until he, after that last fight, he opened up the floodgates by saying he wants to do this fight, finally. Every time before that, it's always been one excuse after another. I was there in the gym watching him train a couple times, and he said it during one of the training sessions, you know, if you want to be the best, you got to take the test. You know, putting that line out there that it was all about the drug testing. That was why he wasn't going to do the fight. And Manny sued him over the allegations of steroid use. And I heard some of that in the gym, too. But I'm not going to put it past Manny Pacquiao to have the fight of his life and to beat Floyd Mayweather on just output and passion and energy.
Well, there, yeah, there you go. And I think I think you're in good company with Mike Tyson on that one, because Tyson feels that so often Mayweather is so overskilled in comparison to his opponent that he can coast, and he could more or less take time off and still win the round. And he doesn't feel that that's going to happen with Manny, because in that Maidana fight, he was coasting in the first one. Then the second one, of course, he dominated more with his boxing skills, but Maidana does not have the hand speed that Manny does. So in that sense, it may be interesting, but it's just hard for me to see this thing going any other way but a decision win for Mayweather. I mean, that's what we've seen for so long. But who knows? Again, that's the exciting, unpredictable element here. And just when I think Mayweather can't knock him out, I still keep flashing back on that Diego Corrales fight. And I had totally misread Floyd in that one. Now, I don't know if Corrales just had a night off, but Floyd's punching was incredible that night. So we may see some action. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it'll be a great fight. I mean, it's really taking over the airwaves and news channels all across the internet. Everybody's talking about this fight now. And as much as people are saying, you know, I wish it happened 5 years ago, I think it's been Mayweather picked it so late in his career. He thinks this is Pacquiao in his, downside of his career. But Pacquiao is not thinking that. And this could be more than he could chew. He might be biting off more than he could chew here. Obviously, I'm pulling for Pacquiao. I think everybody's pulling for Pacquiao, except people who just worship the ground Mayweather walks on. But, you know, I also know that Floyd is such a defensive master. Then the equalizer, according to Cotto, is Freddie Roach. I mean, there's nobody in Mayweather's team that is like Freddie Roach.
No, I would agree. I would definitely agree with that. And I think Freddie's also...
runs his own show. When he trains, he runs his own show. He doesn't let anybody kind of steer him to do what they want to do. I mean, he does his own thing, his own routine. You know, he's got his uncle or his father working the mitts. And that's pretty much it. I mean, nobody really tells him what to do unless it's advice in the corner. While he's sparring and stuff. He just does everything on his own schedule and basically tries to learn from himself when he works out in public anyway. I don't know about private, but Manny Pacquiao has Freddie Roach, who is a guy from New England, by the way, who trained a very good former friend of mine, died of cancer, but call him the original Iron Mike Pizzetieri, and I got some YouTube videos of Mike actually training with Freddie when he was younger, training Freddie. Mike was a big boxer in the 40s, but Freddie has a lot of family in the Massachusetts area there. Grew up there. He had a nickname, the Choir Boy, so he was obviously a Catholic kid. And you know, just basically grew up in a fighting family, and he's got the Parkinson's disease now because he had a lot of rough fights. I mean, you look at Freddie Roach's boxing record. And, I mean, obviously, Floyd's family has some pretty decent boxing records, but look at Freddie's boxing record. For a kid that never went anywhere with it as far as world championships or anything, he had a hell of a career.
Yeah, I think the problem with Freddie was he just had the style that he didn't have a lot of bang in his punches, and he just stayed around too long. And even after Eddie Futch said it's time to pack it in, he should have listened. But you know, it's hard to quit. I mean, and Freddie also is starting to throw out a few little psychological zingers. Like I was looking at a few of the headlines on Max Boxing, and I was saying that he feels Floyd's legs are really certainly not what they used to be. I'm trying to plant those kind of seeds in there. So.
Okay. Well, next story here. Mixed martial arts in New York. Okay. So, Sheldon Silver is out, and looks like pretty good chances that mixed martial arts will be moved by the end of this year. And big story going around, rumor story, probably more on the side of rumor than story. Brock Lesnar versus Frank Mir would be the first event at Madison, New York. And they're trying to make arrangements for it.
Would that be on New Year's Eve, perchance? I mean, let's really make it fancy here. How about New Year's Eve?
Well, doesn't really say what the date is, but it says an interesting possibility of a massive pay-per-view offering in late 2015. Mm-hmm. So I guess they're banking on it coming fall this year. But according to this, the UFC 184 appearance by Brock Lesnar was pre-planned. Lesnar made arrangements with Dana White at least a couple days earlier to appear at the show. This is according to the Wrestling Observer. It was not a last-minute thing, although everyone kept it secret. UFC itself pushed him being there. Those in the UFC expected for some time that Lesnar would be returning, beginning with a fight with Frank Mir. Mir had brought up the night before Lesnar's issue with McMahon about potentially fighting Lesnar, noting that if he didn't win his 222 fight over Antonio Silva, he wouldn't get what he acknowledged would be his highest profile match possible. Now, at press time for this story, it says Lesnar was not in Newark, New Jersey for Raw on March 2nd, but he was not scheduled for the date. He was scheduled to be on the 3-9 Raw in Pittsburgh and is expected to be on that show. If Tony knows more about that than we do, I don't watch that shit. But one person noted that Lesnar missing any of his four last dates would pretty well force a termination after WrestleMania, although WWE does forgive if someone's star power is big enough. Even if he has decided he's leaving, and if the new contract is anything like the last two, that would on the outside feel like a mistake. It's still preferable to be negotiating between three big companies, UFC, Viacom, and WWE. Although most feel that even though he can make money and beat lesser heavyweights in Bellator, that they are not in the running because Lesnar only wants to be with the top organization. The idea is if he's going to compete in the sport, he's competing to be the best, and he can't be that in Bellator. So,
that makes sense, but just as an aside on that whole New York angle, I would love to be a fly on the wall in Sheldon Silver's cell when that night happens. I'd love to be a talking fly. Boy, I'd get some kind of a hyena cackle about it, you know. Can you imagine how furious Sheldon Silver, how miserable, what degree of misery he will be in? I mean, he's in enough misery now, but I just get excited. I fantasize about him being even more miserable and just being beside himself, and there's nothing he can do. And hopefully some of the guards and the inmates will be MMA fans and keep reminding him about it. Oh, I can only hope.
hey, Sheldon, you want to watch the fights?
Yeah, get mad, big man, get mad. You know, I had a this horrible phrase. There was a drill sergeant years ago that was just brutalizing this trainee, and the trainee was just about to pop him. And the drill sergeant knew that, and he just got right in his face. He says, get mad, big man, get mad, because the madder you are, the happier I am. And this guy just had tears in his eyes, but he thought the better of popping him, because for one thing, may have got his ass kicked and going to the stockade. But I've never forgot that phrase, and if I was on the prison staff, I'd have to be rubbing it into silver. If ever, anyone would deserve that, it would be him.
Sheldon, the jailhouse lawyer these days.
You know, isn't it amazing, though, how one guy could bottleneck the entire operation, you know, from the culinary union, I guess?
It's the unions that are backing the guy more than anything, because the guy's not going to vote against it. You know, otherwise, I mean, he's basically got them paying his donations to his legal fees, I mean, to his campaign fees and all that.
Yeah, now it's going to be legal fees. A little Freudian slip there, huh? Well, I'm enjoying this so much. I'm on top of the world. What a great topic to elevate my mood.
I said before on the show, the union people contacted me when I was out in Vegas, and I sat down with a couple different people a few different times to just kind of go over what I knew. And, you know, I kind of found their approach puzzling to me, because it seemed like they were gathering information to start their own fighters union. You know, if you were going to go through all the trouble to do what they did to kind of take down the UFC for how they treat their fighters, then maybe you should take the union and make a new part of it to help these people. I mean, if you're really that serious about exposing this, but...
Mm-hmm.
They kind of got so involved in the hatred and this push to have this secret ballot vote facing casinos that they just forgot about trying to follow through on something good in that whole argument. I mean, they put out the Unfit for Children site, UFC Unfit for Children. Every swear word ever said by any MMA fighter that was associated with UFC on YouTube, every clip, just stuff like that. And it's just, there was no purpose behind it except to smash the station casinos, just make them quit, to pressure them. That was the only thing. And, you know, they've done stuff locally that's just as offensive, if not more offensive. But at least people locally know what the hell's going on. I mean, people in New York have nothing to do with it. There's no station casinos in New York City. In New York State, I mean, they might have a property somewhere in the state, but I don't think they have any casino interests at all. So, who gives a shit? Why do the unions get involved? All because of station casinos doesn't want to unionize? I mean, give me a break. Thousands of dollars to trash the way the UFC treats their fighters, and then do nothing about it.
Well, not only that, but they're depriving. If they had their way, they would deprive all the fans of the sport what they wanted. I mean, they're like a bunch of little kids. Well, give us everything we want. And to me, it's just they're taking down so many. I mean, people that like the sport, and I mean, it's not just MMA; it could be any sport. I mean, you start picking on something there, you're not only hurting everyone but yourself. So, fortunately, they are in the process of losing. And I could imagine, here again, I'd like to be a fly on the wall at their next big meeting.
Well, the funny part is, their union also represents hotel workers and a lot of people in New York who would benefit if the UFC came to town every few months, you know.
Well, but the thing is, Rich, I think there's so much emotion involved, and that's what I've noticed about good traders in the market, for example, or just any kind of businessman. The more you can keep your emotions in check and realize it's just business, I think you're far more successful. But when emotions take over, logic flies out the window, and then the money is secondary, and then what the hell are you involved in it in the first place for?
Right.
I mean, I've made that mistake in the markets a few times by having to say that I'm right. Well, the market didn't know that, and I wound up being run over by a steamroller on a few occasions. So you just learn to keep the emotions out of it. But,
well, I don't know. I think if you were going to gamble on mixed martial arts being legal in New York, I don't know if I'd go as far as gambling on Brock Lesnar being in any main event. But, yeah. I think it's possible. I think it's very possible they could have a fight there by the end of the year. But one thing about Brock Lesnar that stands out, like they actually just featured him in a promo for WWE. And there was something, I don't have the story right in front of me, I thought I'd cut and pasted it here, but there was something that was written that I saw about it where this promo apparently said something about the UFC champion again and the WWE champion. So I wonder if he's trying to get the best of both worlds. You know, the UFC doesn't like to co-promote, but the WWE doesn't like to either, apparently. What if they made this big blockbuster deal because both guys want him in both leagues? Just for the cross benefit of promoting, you know, both ways. This is the first co-promotion. That could happen with a guy like Brock Lesnar.
You know, and I remember my first reaction when I heard this years ago was, you know, there's enough stigma on MMA, you know, you get these, well, I call them brain stems, you know, is that stuff real? Well, if anyone in 2015 is asking an idiotic question, well, is that stuff real? It ain't real. Okay, this discussion is over with, sir. You're a moron. Just move. Get away from me. You know what I mean? So I don't fear that stigma as much as I used to. I mean, maybe I'm off base on that, but what do you think about that?
I don't know. Say that again?
Well, in other words, if pro wrestling becomes affiliated with that, is lumped into the same category as MMA, is that really a horrible thing, or are there any benefits of that?
Oh, there are tremendous benefits, I mean, for both. Because wrestling, not every wrestling fan is into MMA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got women who can't stand the sight of blood. I mean, there's not a lot of blood in wrestling these days, but a lot less of it in wrestling than MMA, if there is any still. You know, but they watch wrestling. They like the soap opera aspect of wrestling. You know, sports entertainment's different than real fighting, but you might be able to bring those two fan bases together for the betterment
mm-hmm.
of both.
Yeah.
You know, say if, like, John Jones was in WrestleMania, maybe I watch WrestleMania because I'm an MMA fan. You know, vice versa. Brock Lesnar comes over and fights in the UFC. A lot of wrestling fans are going to say, I want to see how he does in his first fight. You know, especially if he's still signed with the WWE. He's coming back.
Yeah.
So follow his career wherever he goes. And I think Brock is very conscious that there's tons of money to be made with wrestling, but he also doesn't want to let go of what he started with the UFC, and he does have a lot
mm-hmm.
to prove, because in the end, I really don't think he wants his legacy to be, I walked away from real fighting to do the fake shit.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And the reason that I kind of had my earlier attitude was back in the early days now. We're going back to UFC 1, UFC 2, you know, way back when. And there was that stigma that there were people back then saying, is that stuff real?
Right.
And the way I tried to answer that question, I said, well, I've been around the real stuff, you know, from boxing and, you know, some other stuff. And I also know the fake stuff. You know, as a kid, I loved pro wrestling, and I've done a couple of point-style karate tournaments, and I love the kung fu movies, so I know what's real and what's fake. I tried to explain to them, this stuff is as real as it gets. And then after a while, they'd watch, and then they'd realize that, that the UFC was the real deal. So I don't think there'd be that stigma that there that we did have a bit of that in the early days.
Yeah, everybody knows it's fake now, but I mean, there's also
I'm talking about the UFC and MMA in general. Everyone knows it's real, and they better know. And if they don't know, like I told you, I'd say to them, "Why are we having this discussion? It's over with. Get away from me,
yeah.
You idiot." You know. So, well, we'll see how it goes. I'd like to see more co-promotions. And you know, you mentioned PJ Flores, and he was talking about years ago when they were having a mixed card with boxing and MMA, one boxing competition and then one MMA competition right there on the same card. And he felt that it had the potential to work because he came up with this famous phrase that I like to quote him on, fight fans want action.
Right.
And it's just that simple. So, of course, there's maybe some resistance in some corners with the traditionalists, but I'd like to see them more integrated there, too.
And, you know, you're going to have CM Punk having his first fight one of these days in the UFC,
mm-hmm.
fresh off, no experience in MMA. Just doing the fake stuff, so that's going to be interesting. It's going to, you know, show whether a guy like that can do that, can transition that easily. But Brock, I don't know. I mean, he's going to have to do some dynamic shit to be competitive. Sometimes you've got muscles that are too big for fighting, and I think he's one of those cases. His muscles are too big for the agility that it takes to be a superior fighter, even a heavyweight in the UFC now, because these guys have gotten so much better while he's gone. So
well,
even if he doesn't come back, he better fight a bunch of bums before he gets a title.
Well,
shot.
It's I'll say nothing different than I said when he first came around, that he just seemed like he was working his strengths, which you could make a case for that, but anymore, it's just like that CrossFit quote. That the way to really succeed at an event like CrossFit is be really super good at one thing and don't suck at anything. And Brock has half that equation down. I mean, he's really super good at wrestling and the takedowns and the strength and all that, but his stand-up game is never evolved. His jiu-jitsu game's never evolved. And the disheartening thing about it seems like the thing for him to do would be to move around to different camps. And maybe that means putting on a jiu-jitsu gi or, you know, going into a boxing gym or just working strict Muay Thai instead of getting up in his own private gym lifting weights. I mean, he's got the strength. And when he came back after the fight with Kane and he was going to fight Overeem, and I remember his trainer said, Brock is stronger now than he's ever been. I thought, oh, my God. Okay, yeah, that's what he needs, more strength. So I don't know if at this stage he could evolve. I'd like to see him. Because I think he's a fascinating person, for sure. But I just don't know if he can shift gears.
We'd bring a lot of eyeballs to the sport. Would be more of a spectacle. We might get a matching facial scar on the other side from Cain Velasquez. But in the long run, it'll be worth watching. Way.
Oh yeah, and if you remember his fight with Shane Carwin. Now, if you tell me that wasn't a barn burner, you don't have a pulse. I mean, if your heart wasn't pounding in that one, you remember that fight.
Yeah, adrenaline dump.
Well, again, as I was saying, Forrest Pettis fought on that card, and he told me back in the dressing room, Carwin was just on the verge of just complete collapse. He gave everything he had. But in that first round, it really looked like Lesnar was gone. I mean, I'd sure never knock Lesnar's willpower or courage. I mean, he's going to be in there, giving it everything he's got. But I just question if he has the tools.
My favorite Brock Lesnar moment was when he got up there in front of all the fans and tried to act like he was still in the WWE and said, screw Bud Light, I'm going home and having a Coors Light. Bud Light didn't pay me.
Yeah, I remember. I think he was called out. He was called out on the carpet. He was put on the carpet on that one.
No, it was worse. Dana White got a hold of him in the showers. Not Jerry Sandusky style or anything, but apparently that was discovered. He got a hold of him and started screaming at him right in the showers. So he was literally, brought to bear, I guess you could say. Just ripped into right there in the locker room. And probably gave him a perspective of Dana White that made Vince McMahon like Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah.
Because Dana doesn't take any shit from his fighters. I mean, especially not at a live event like that. He doesn't care how big you are. He went right in there and confronted him. One good thing you could say about the guy, he wasn't afraid to be a boss man in that situation.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got big UFC 185 event coming up on Saturday from Dallas, Texas, American Airlines Center. Main event is the champ, Anthony Pettis, 18-2, fighting Rafael Dos Anjos, 23-7. And Pettis has been pretty unstoppable lately. His gym there has taken some heat due to the guy dying in the kickboxing match there months ago. Rufus Gym there in Milwaukee has been kind of taking a few backhanded insults from different people who have trained there, and a lot of accusations of rough training and overtraining, shit like that. So one guy who seems above it all is Anthony Pettis. He hasn't been adversely affected by it as far as I can see, and been looking good. I mean, the number one thing is striking, and he's certainly great at that.
And he's not clueless on the ground either, as he's shown in that incredible submission with Benson Henderson. So I don't think it's affected him at all.
And I know that Nate Diaz, coming off a big break and a lot of bitching, is probably not a good bar for Rafael Dos Anjos. Totally dismantled Nate. Made him look like an amateur his last fight. And he's coming in pretty confident and pretty much into the rivalry already. So this could be a really great fight.
I think Dos Anjos has definitely earned the shot. I mean, you can't argue with his recent performances.
He's got a lot more experience, 30 fights as opposed to 20, 10 more fights on the book. So that could come into play, too. He did look very technically superior in the Nate Diaz fight. You can imagine Anthony Pettis is going to be a lot more, aggressive and competitive. But at the same time, Dos Anjos looked like he could have handled just about anybody on that night anyway.
It's definitely going to be fun because I have to go with the champ in this one because not only is he quick, but he combines that aggression with such good, crisp, clean technique, and he seems to know exactly when to transition. So he's my call for this one, but it's going to be a barn burner, I think, because Dos Anjos is not afraid to get in and really rock and roll with him. So this should be really entertaining.
All right. Well, we're going to get back to boxing in a minute. Just wanted to say we got the tornado on the line.
What's up? How you guys doing? I've been listening to you for a few minutes.
All right.
Cool. You doing all right?
I don't know if you saw my Facebook post tonight, but it was an empty suitcase, and it says, "My guide to packing. Take out suitcase. Take picture of suitcase. Post picture of suitcase on Facebook. Take break."
Okay. Check that out. Your new Facebook profile picture. That's pretty cool.
My new one? What, the one where I was in the ring at Lock Haven?
Yeah, you like my comment?
Yeah, everybody needs a tornado in their corner. That's right. Rich, remember, you were close to being opposed to that hideous face.
Right.
What's the face of intimidation? Now, to segue into some boxing, now, tomorrow I'm jumping on an airplane and I'm flying down to Clearwater, Florida. I'm going to see my Phillies, who are not predicted to be very good this year, are going to play Rich's Boston Red Sox, who have a shot at being pretty good, but that doesn't matter. I'm going to be in the hometown of somebody called Keith One Time Thurman.
Nice. Well, we already kind of went over that one, but we can rehash it here in
Basically, just give a quick input on it. Both fights. Broner was too fast. Molina, it was like people were saying, like, he didn't let his hands go. Well, here's a common problem. If you can't zero in on a target, a lot of times you get hesitant to let your hands go. I was training a friend of mine from college last week, first time she ever put gloves on. And I was, you know, just trying to teach her, you know, just some of the, like, little basics about the sport. And I said, for a guy like me, I'm short. I always had to use a lot of upper body movement, like similar to Joe Frazier, because I said, I put my hand up, and I said, just tap my hand. Just keep tapping it. And she was tapping it and smiling. And then I just started moving it back and forth. Like, I was waving. I said, now tap it. And she was hesitating and trying to see it and trying to tap it. I said, exactly. That's the concept of a moving target. It was making you hesitate. And the same thing with the Broner. The Broner was so fast. Broner was just steps ahead of Molina. Molina couldn't let his hands go because he could not focus on the target. But not a very impressive performance. Broner makes an ass of himself as usual. I wouldn't mind seeing him fight a guy like Danny Garcia and getting deposited on Mars or getting a rematch with McDonough and getting another beatdown. That's what it's going to be. Main event, Robert Guerrero is tough. I mean, Thurman put him down, Guerrero got up. You can't say enough for a guy like Robert Guerrero. Keith Thurman's a naturally bigger fighter. He's a naturally better puncher, younger, more athletic. And Guerrero hung in there with him and took some shots.
Yeah, it was a pretty intense fight. I noticed that Guerrero was slapping a lot of his punches. The big difference between him and Thurman's approach was obviously Guerrero was swinging more, but he also forgot that, you know, you have to put some power behind those punches if you're going to win this fight because you need the knockout. I don't think he's been in that situation a lot in his career. And he thought he could box Thurman, and Thurman, he didn't really get to the point where he was so aggressive he was endangering himself ever. It was always very calculated, a lot of countering, and everything that you're supposed to do against the southpaw, left hook and straight right hand. I mean, they said it in the broadcast. That's the picture perfect thing to do. And you know, he didn't waste a lot of punches either. There was a couple times where I thought he was hurt, but really, Guerrero needs to learn how to turn over his punches and extend off the back foot and just, you know, not use just the arm. He was just arm punching a lot. That's why, you know, he was landing combinations, but they really weren't hurting for him. So that's why I could see the margin of victory being so wide. But it was still a great fight.
Well, here's the thing. Guerrero's never been a good puncher, and he likely never will be, and it is what it is.
But yeah, we're going to get to the upcoming fights in a few minutes. We got a couple mixed martial arts cards to get through here. Big UFC event. We just started to go over and went the main event. Tom's pick is the champ. I'm going to go with the same Pettis. The co-main event, I think, is going to steal this show. Carla Esparza versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I don't know how to pronounce that one, but I think it's Jędrzejczyk, something like that. Jędrzejczyk is undefeated, 8-0. Carla Esparza is 10-2. And Jędrzejczyk took on this girl that was supposed to be on the show and would have been a favorite to win it, or at least, you know, face Esparza at the end of it. So Joanna came in there and beat that girl. And now she's got to beat the girl with the belt. So it's going to be a pretty interesting fight there, and both of them can slug. So it's probably chances are there's going to be a lot of punches thrown in this one. Punches, kicks, knees, elbows, the works. A lot of striking. Johnny Hendricks coming back on this card. 16-3. He's fighting Matt Brown, 19-12. A couple tough guys there with brutal styles. And this one's very interesting to me. Alistair Overeem, a heavyweight fight here, 38-14, fighting Roy Nelson, 20-10. Who's going to win this one? I'm betting on Roy, but Alistair has been hurting people again in training, so who knows?
Yeah, and since Roy's chin is not the same concrete, you know, a lot of times we've seen that when a guy's got a concrete chin and all of a sudden it's not concrete anymore. So I don't know. I kind of looking toward Overeem on it, but my heart's with Roy.
Yeah. We got Sam Stout, 20-10 with one draw, fighting Ross Pearson, 16-8. Darren Cruikshank, 16-5, fighting Benil Dariush, 9-1. Sergio Pettis, younger brother of Anthony, interviewed him actually in the past. Sergio is 12-1, lost his UFC debut, and has been pretty good since then. He's fighting Ryan Benoit, 7-3. Then we got Henry Cejudo, 7-0, fighting Chris Carriasso, who's 17-6. Jared Rushalt, 11-2, fighting Josh Copeland, 9-1. Joseph Duffy, 12-1, fighting Jake Lindsay, 9-2. Roger Narvaez, 7-1, fighting Elias Theodoro, 10-0. And Larissa Pacheco, 10-1, fighting Jermaine D. Rendami. And there is literally nobody on the preliminaries with more than three losses after the Cruikshank fight. That's pretty interesting. Actually, Carriasso has six losses, so he's the only one. And the only other big show in town, and it's not really in town, it's overseas this weekend. That is ONE FC. I think they actually just changed their name. Did you hear about that, Tom?
No.
Now they're ONE Championship.
Hmm.
They changed the ONE FC to ONE Championship. They are also just recently sponsored by Disney, believe it or not. So, I guess that must really bother the unions. Unfit for children, mixed martial arts, you know. So, ONE FC. And ONE FC 25 is actually ONE Championship now. It's no FC anymore. It's just ONE C, I guess. Their next event is their 25th event. Adriano Moraes, 12-1, is fighting Asuka Mikami in the main event. And Mikami is 11-2, one draw, one no contest. And we've got Peter Davis versus Rajinder Singh Mina. Co-main event. Davis is 9-3. Mina is 8-1. Ann Usman is 2-1, fighting Walla Abbas Mohammed Kamali, 2-2 in a women's fight there. Ev Ting, 8-2, fighting Carrie Belos, 7-2. Gianna Suba, 4-1, fighting Stan Vu, 5-3. Chan Rofana, 2-1, fighting Ramon Gonzalez, 1-0. Kirsty Granaway, 1-0, fighting the debuting April Ocenio. And Aguilan Thaney, 1-0, fighting Rink Fabriza Rainier. That's over in Malaysia this weekend. Tom will be in attendance, right, Tom?
There you go. I already got my tickets.
All right. So, boxing schedule. I think this is going to be the longest we've spent on boxing in a while. There's like literally four pages of good stuff here this weekend. Starting tonight, actually. There's a big event going on tonight. HBO Latino has a big event tonight. Probably going on right now. It's from San Antonio, Texas. It's a Golden Boy Promotions card. Super featherweight Francisco Vargas facing Will Tomlinson in the main event. This is for the WBO International Super Featherweight title and the NABF Super Featherweight title. Vargas is 21-0-1 with 15 knockouts, and Tomlinson is 23-1-1 with 13 knockouts. And we got light heavyweights also on this card for the vacant WBC United States light heavyweight title. Vyacheslav Shabransky, 12-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Fabiano Pena, 11-0-1 with 8 knockouts. And that's pretty much it for fights on that card. But that is not it this weekend. Of course, we have so much more. Friday night, the big night, because more free TV fights. Friday night. Spike TV is getting in on the mix. I can find it. But before we get to that one, we're going to get to our former guests. We're going to be dealing with a lot of former guests here on this list this week. We got Billy Wright fighting Friday the 13th. Big day in boxing. Fighting at the Wekopa Casino. Haven't been there. Wekopa Casino. And that's in Fort McDowell, Arizona. It says Time Warner for the TV. I don't know. USA Time Warner. I don't know what the heck that means to us. It's Roy Jones Jr. card. Billy's facing a guy named Gilberto Mateus Domingos. Billy is 46-4 with 37 knockouts. Domingos is 22-2 with 20 knockouts. So, in other words, all but two of his fights have ended in him knocking someone out or being knocked out himself. Because both of his losses were by knockout. So, he's only had two fights. We got a couple 8-rounders on this card. Milorad Zizek, 11-0 with 5 knockouts. He's fighting Lewis Rose, who's 11-2-1 with 3 knockouts. That's for the vacant NABF junior middleweight title. And we've got welterweights Solomon Egberim, 22-4-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Gerardo Cuevas, who's 17-12 with 15 knockouts, and all 12 of his losses were by knockout. That sucks. Wow. All but two of his fights, same thing. The Big Spike TV fights, of course. Coming to us from Ontario, California, the Citizens Business Bank Arena. Big main event, Andre Berto, 29-3, with 22 knockouts, fighting Josecito Lopez, 33-6, with 19 knockouts. And this is for the interim WBA World Welterweight title. I don't really see Andre Berto being in the same form he used to be. He used to be, you know, nobody could beat him.
No, Berto used to be a really good fighter. You know, he had a good jab, and then that, you know, damage to his left shoulder. I mean, you took away basically the guy's biggest weapon. And, you know, he had the tough loss against Victor Ortiz, but the fight that really still stands out to me was the beating that he took about a year or two ago against Jesus Soto Carras, who was nothing more than a past his prime type of club fighter. And Carras really took the to him and stopped him. And now, Josecito Lopez is a good fighter. You know, he has a win over Victor Ortiz. He has, a knockout loss against Canelo Alvarez. This should be a fight that, if Berto has anything left, he should still be able to win. If Berto doesn't really have anything left, Lopez can, steal one.
Yeah, Lopez does have six losses, so, you know, it is a guy that Andre Berto can beat, but, you know, it's all a question of, is he coming back to his prime form or not? So, Josito has a few more wins there, 33 as opposed to 29, but does have a few extra losses, too. So, we'll see. We'll see if he can pull it off, but... I don't know. This is an interesting fight. On paper, it looks great. But, you know, if Andre doesn't bring his best game, I don't think he can hang with a guy like Lopez. So it's going to be, it could be one of those fights like Guerrero versus Barron. You know, who comes with the better style, but it will still be entertaining for both guys. Both guys will have a chance. Then we have Sean Porter versus Roberto Garcia at welterweight. This is a 10-rounder. No title on the line here. This is just a big-time welterweight showdown. Porter is 24-1-1 with 15 knockouts. Also a former guest of ours back in the day.
Yeah,
definitely
a couple years ago.
Roberto Garcia is 26-3 with 23 knockouts. Tough opponent for anybody. Never been knocked out.
This is going to be where Berto is going to be trying to rebuild his career after that upset loss to Paul Brook last year. You know, he looked so great in destroying Paulie Malignaggi. He looked fantastic. Then he went up against Paul Brook and just literally it was like he had handcuffs on. He couldn't do anything.
And another former guest of ours, Chris Areola. 35-4 with 31 knockouts, fighting Curtis Harper, who's 12-3 with 8 knockouts, heavyweight. And, of course, Areola is coming off a tough fight against the current WBC champ. Remains the burn, rematch, but didn't go his way. So this is a big confidence booster fight for him, fighting a guy with a little less experience, only 15 fights. So should have no trouble with him. We got another heavyweight in action, Gerald Washington. He's 15-0 with 11 knockouts. He's fighting Jason Gabern, who's 26-18, 4 draws, 11 knockout wins. Half of the losses, 9 of them, were by knockout. So Gerald has a pretty good shot of getting another knockout there. That's pretty much it for the best fights on that card. And we go same night, Showtime. I'm pretty sure Spike TV and Showtime are owned by the same conglomerate, but they're competing against each other on this. Free TV and pay TV. This one's from Westbury, New York. Showtime main event, Antoine Douglas in a 10-rounder against Thomas LaManna. Both guys are 16-0. Antoine Douglas has a draw. LaManna doesn't, so he's got one more total fight, but he also has 3 more knockouts to his credit. LaManna only has 7. Douglas has 10. This is for the vacant WBA Fed-A-Latin middleweight title, even though neither guy is Latino. And we've got lightweight Ismael Barroso, also 16-0 with 2 draws. He's got 15 knockouts at lightweight. He's fighting Isuf Kinda, who is 17-2 with 7 knockouts. And Jerry Odoms also on the card. He's 12-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Andrew Hernandez, who's 8-0-1 but only has 1 knockout to his credit. And a couple undefeated guys at super bantamweight. Adam Lopez, 9-0 with 4 knockouts, fighting Pablo Cruz, who's 11-0 with 3 knockouts. And another former guest of ours, recent guest, Tommy Reynaud, 22-6-1, is fighting Alan Litzau, 14-8, with 7 knockouts.
So Reynaud's coming back pretty quick after that last fight.
Yeah. They just announced it this week, I think, that he was fighting on this card. We put it That's only page one, folks. That's just page one of this week's schedule. Page two. Come on, Doc Frank, show me the money. While we're waiting for Mark, I do have another story I wanted to wait for Tony to hear. Big good news for a guy fighting this weekend who we'll get to, Steve Cunningham. His daughter, Kennedy, actually had heart surgery December 5th.
Yeah.
And now she's doing great, apparently.
So, they did have a scare a few weeks ago when she had a seizure. I follow Steve and his wife, Libby, on Facebook. I talk to them as often as I can. And, I know when they had the surgery. Because there was a lot of fear going into that, thinking like they might not be able to have it, originally. Like, they were talking to doctors at the University of Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia, and it was like they were concerned because of, with the defect in her heart since birth, they were worried that her arteries had hardened so much that if they tried to do the surgery, she would die from blood loss. And then there was a doctor at the University of Pittsburgh that was able to do the transplant, and it was successful. And like I said, I followed their rather frequently, and everything's been good except for that one little hiccup they had a few weeks ago.
Well, it says she was up and walking after just 3 days from the surgery. Pretty impressive. Said she didn't cry at all. She just got through it. So, pretty good stuff. Tough kid, just like her dad. But anyway, Fox Rider. He is fighting this weekend. We'll get to him eventually. Let's see what else we got. All right. Yeah, speaking of Steve Cunningham, 28-6 with 13 knockouts, fighting for a title up there in Montreal, Quebec. He's fighting Vyacheslav Glazkov, who's 19-0-1 with 12 knockouts. This is for the USBA heavyweight title. It's kind of odd because it must have taken place in Canada. The United States belt, you might want to have the fight in the United States. Of course, the big fight on this card is Kovalev versus Pascal. Kovalev is still undefeated, 26-0-1 with 23 knockouts, taken out Bernard Hopkins by decision. He's facing a guy that Bernard Hopkins beat, Jean Pascal, who is native to Montreal. He's a native to Haiti, really, but moved to Montreal when he was young, kind of like Bermain Stiverne. Pascal is 29-2-1 with 17 knockouts on the line here at the WBA Super World Light Heavyweight title, the IBF World Light Heavyweight title, and the WBO World Light Heavyweight title. And if that's not enough for you on this card, this is an HBO card, by the way, Saturday. We got a light heavyweight fight between Vasily Lepekin, 17-0 with 9 knockouts, and Isaac Chilimba, who's 23-2-2 with 10 knockouts. And that one is for the vacant NABF light heavyweight title.
All right, Tony, what do you think about Pascal's chances of pulling off the upset?
Not good. I was having dinner with my dad tonight. We were talking about it. And, Pascal's a tough fighter, but he's hittable. And I thought he lost both fights to Hopkins. The first fight he had scored 2 knockdowns and still only got a draw in his hometown. That tells you right there that he pretty much got his rear end handed to him. And, Hopkins is not much of a puncher anymore, and Hopkins knocked him down in the second fight once or twice. When Kovalev hits him, Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's
so,
kind of that's definitely the way I seen it. I sent you guys that countdown, and I was looking at his style earlier, and he seems like he's very hittable, and he seems like I don't think he's going to outbox Kovalov, so that means he's got to outslug him, and I have two words for that. Good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
Told you we're going to have a lot of former guests in the boxing section tonight, and you know, speaking of that countdown. John Pascal is being trained by former guest Roy Jones Jr. So, might bring a little bit different style to his game. He actually has co-trainers now. He's stuck with his original trainer, but he brought Roy Jones Jr. in. So, I have an X factor there, we might see. I still think Kovalev's going to steamroll him, but could make it interesting. I don't know. I said that's on HBO from Quebec. Also have kind of an interesting one from Denmark on Saturday. Super middleweight Patrick Nielsen, 23-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting George Taduanipa, who's 34-1-2 with 24 knockouts. This is for the vacant WBA International Super Middleweight title. Nothing else really on that card. That's that great. That's a good fight for Denmark, that's for sure. The vacant IBF Intercontinental Heavyweight title is on the line over in Germany this weekend. Heavyweights Erkan Tieper, 13-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Johan Duhaupas, 31-1 with 20 knockouts. Main event there. Nothing else is in support of that one, though. Here's what kind of might look like a mismatch to a lot of people, I guess, but in Tijuana, Mexico, so what do you expect? Bantamweight's main event female fight for the WTC World Female Bantamweight title. Yasmin Rivas, she's 31-8. 9 knockouts, fighting Selena Salazar, 6-1-2, and 1 knockout win. The co-main event there is Fernando Montiel, who's 53-4-2, with 39 knockouts, fighting Rogelio Honriquez, who is 19-2-2, with 14 knockouts. Also, super bantamweight Juan Carlos Sanchez Jr., 19-3-1 with 9 knockouts, fighting Luis Melendez, who's 41-9-1 with 30 knockouts. Pretty interesting. So, that's page 2. We're halfway there. Halfway. And there's more. I don't know why BoxRec takes so long to load when it's supposed to be already loaded. Come on! There it is. Okay. Top of page 3 here. Here is the WBC International Female Super Flyweight title on the line, again from Mexico. Mariana Juarez, she is 40-7, 17 knockout wins and 3 draws. She's fighting Naoko Fujioka, who is 12-1, 6 knockouts. The supporting main event here is a 10-round bantamweight fight. Julio Seja is 28-1 with 26 knockouts. He's fighting Oscar Blanquet, who is 32-9-1 with 23 knockouts. Let's There's one from Madison Square Garden Theater. This is the one we were talking about last week with Will Rosinski, one of the participants on this card. There's going to be three pro fights on this FDNY versus Irish National Police card down in Madison Square Garden Theater in New York, New York. And we'll be pulling for the FDNY guys. With them. And great guys all around. And even though I'm Irish, I still want the Irish police force to lose this one. But anyway, the main event, Patrick Hyland, he's 29-1 with 13 knockouts. He's fighting Manuel De Los Reyes Herrera, 21-15-1 with 15 knockouts. Our guest from last week, Will Rosinski, he's 17-2 with 9 knockouts. He's fighting Paul Gonsalves, who is 7-5-1. I was trying to get him on as a guest tonight, but I kind of I didn't get to him early enough. I got his number Monday, and I didn't call him until yesterday. So we couldn't get Spike on, Gary O'Sullivan, but he's fighting a super middleweight 8-rounder. He's 19-1 with 12 knockouts. He's fighting Milton Nunes. He's 28-12-1 with 25 knockouts. And we got to give a big shout out to Bobby McGuire because he broke his arm, unfortunately. So I hope he has a lot of meds. It doesn't affect his judgment when he's coaching these guys on Saturday. I didn't get the full story on how he broke his arm because he was telling me, but, you know, I had to try to get the interview set up myself because his arm was busted, so I wasn't about to be like, oh, yeah, well, can you explain to me how it happened? Because he's having a problem texting and calling people with his broken arm. So I'm sure emailing is no better. Anyway. Yeah, Gary's facing Milton Nunes. He's 28-12 with one draw. 25 knockout wins to his credit, but 9 knockout losses among the 12. Gary himself's never been knocked out, only has one loss. And just checking out Paul Gonsalves' record here. Will Rosinski's opponent. Yeah, chances are I could have seen him fight before. Fought at Memorial Hall in Plymouth. I've seen fights there back in 2009. It's about the right time. Probably where I've seen him. The only other place I would have been able to see him is fought Boston a couple of times, but sort of recent. I've been to any fights in Boston recently. He's had a lot of tough opponents, though. I mean, the losses he has are last two losses are to guys who are 12-0. So, like Rosinski said, he's not taking this guy lightly. I mean, I guess he shouldn't. And again, speaking of former guests, the main event in Glendale, California, Bob Arum card, Toka Khan Clary, guy we had on when he was like 2-0 or something, dynamic as a professional. He's now 14-0 with 9 knockouts. He's fighting Edwin Solis, who's 6-2-3 with 4 knockouts. Co-main event is 8-round super featherweight Sergio Nunes, 12-1-1 with 8 knockouts, fighting Angel Rodriguez, who's 11-1 with 5 knockouts. So, lots of former guests.
Good popular.
This could be the Jesus fight of the week and the mismatch of the week going on in Venezuela. We got 10-round main event here, super bantamweights. Jesus Vargas, he's 9-2-1 with 7 knockouts. This is for the Venezuelan super bantamweight title, too, by the way. He's fighting Miguel Urdaneta, who is 0-8 with 5 knockout losses. No wins. And
what a way to begin, huh? Wow.
So the sporting fight here is a cruiserweight 8-rounder between Williams Okando, who's 12-1 with 11 knockouts. And he's fighting Jesus, who's going to need to rise from the dead Jesus Bermudez is 0-2 with both of his fights ending by knockout. That sucks. Jesus Bermudez, yeah, he's going to have to rise from the dead in that one. So if you're in Venezuela and you want to see some guys get their asses kicked, that's not the only one, only two either. There's another one, a 10-0 fighter fighting an 0-0-1 fighter. This guy hasn't even had a win or a loss, just one tie. Super lightweight, though, so probably won't do much damage. Okay, last page. Alright, now I gotta wait again. So, Tony, while you were in hiatus there, we were talking a little bit about Brock Lesnar. He's coming back to the UFC again.
I heard you guys talking about him. I heard when I dialed in.
And a possibility we hadn't thought of before, I'm thinking might happen here because we've got, there was a WWE promo put out where something was mentioned about Brock being the WWE and the UFC champion.
Yeah, I saw that the other night.
So how could he retain both unless he had a co-promotional deal with both companies? Do you think that's possible? Can he work that
out? Here's where I could... I think it was more talk than anything. And here's why. Because right now, if he signs a new deal with the WWE, that could impact what happens a couple weeks at WrestleMania. Because right now, if he's on his way out, you know he's going to lose. He's going to lose to Roman Reigns, and then they might bring Seth Rollins in and do a screw job or whatever. But it's set up to be Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. If Lesnar re-signs, then, well, okay, now there's a possibility, okay, he could win. You know, he could keep title. He's on, like, this dominant run for the last year. He's only wrestled, like, 3 or 4 times, but every one of them has been, like, dominant. You know, he beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Nobody ever beats The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Then he destroys John Cena at SummerSlam. He has the match at the Royal Rumble. He has another match here and there. And he's just so dominant, it's like almost like they're not overusing him, which is a good thing. Because, like, you know, back in the day, you know, before they became really, you know, national, you get a guy like Andre the Giant. Well, he might only wrestle in New York or Philadelphia, like, once a month or once every few months. Then he might go out to the West Coast for a while. So you knew when he came in, okay, they were going to bring him in, he would, you know, dominate a few of the big bad guys there, then you'd be gone. You know, once they started using, like, where they were having constantly just him versus the same guys over and over, then you had him. Like, and then he eventually lost some matches, and his mystique was kind of, you know, dissipated as he was getting older. Same thing with Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar right now has, like, just... You know, he's, like, untouchable. He's, like, destroying everybody. He's conquering everybody. And now they're like, okay, can we bring a new challenger to face him? So, now imagine this. Imagine he goes to the UFC in the middle of this huge mystique. He's the most ass-kicking guy ever. And he gets destroyed. Well, his WWE marketability, even though we know it's entertainment, just went down. At the same time, what a UFC standpoint... You're signing Brock Lesnar to have this big fight against whoever, and he gets hurt in the WWE match. I could see both sides wanting to say, oh, yeah, a co-promotional thing, as long as we do the promotional, and not let the other company do it.
Right. Good points. I'm pretty sure he's staying in the WWE. I've said it 100 times, so I'll say it again. I don't think he's going to risk it, but I said to Tom earlier that at the same time, I don't think he wants the legacy to be that he quit real fighting to do the fake shit. I think that bothers him. And that's why he is kind of flirting with the idea. I think he's also trying to get his best market value out of the WWE, but I think he seriously does want to think about it, at least. While he has the chance before he renews this contract or not. He's got to be seriously thinking about it. I mean, it's business and personal for him in a lot of ways. So, you know, especially if he's going to go against an old rival like Frank Mir in his return fight, I mean, that's got to grind his gears. He wants to pull that horseshoe out of his butt again. Right? So, who knows? I'm going to be surprised more than anybody that he comes back, if he does come back. But it could really be one of those situations where he wants his legacy to be that he gave it that second shot, even though he had his face cut wide open the last time he gave it a shot. Anyway. Another big fight this weekend in boxing. The last fight I'm going to mention here is on Sunday. You got to go all the way to fucking Yemen if you want to see this.
Yemen.
Ali Rainey, who you might not recognize the name, but he's sort of famous because he set the record for most first-round knockouts in a row. He is 24-0 with 24 knockouts. And he's facing a big test in a guy named Hani Ansi, who is 18-0-1, and he has 16 knockouts for his 18 wins. And it's for the vacant Universal Boxing Organization, UBO, World Super Flyweight title. Only fight on the card in Yemen. So, no TV. TV's probably freaking outlawed there. But if you're there, I mean, this is a good fight. Ramey usually faces people he knows he's going to beat. I think he's had every single one of his fights in Yemen, where he's probably from, so I bet that helps. His alias is God. Capital G-O-D. Birthplace, Yemen. Last guy he fought was 9-3. Best record of anybody he's ever fought in at all. That was a few fights ago. So this is a big step up, 18-0-1. Might need good luck this time. So yeah, he had, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 18. Straight first round knockouts. Then it was TKO in 7. And same guy he just knocked out in the first round. Took him 7 rounds next fight. And he fought the same guy again. Took him 9 rounds. Guy kept getting better. Guess what? He fought him again. Knocked him out in the second round. Didn't fight him again after that. Prince Mav was not so princely. Those fights. That's about it. Unless you guys have any other pressing news or events to talk about, I think I've exhausted my supply.
Well, you know, I'm going to be away this weekend, so I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to be able to see. I'm going to try to catch some of the fights on Saturday night. I'm actually going to try to see Rich's boy over the weekend, stopping down at Hogan's Beach, so maybe I'll talk to the Hulkster himself. it's kind of like his bar, restaurant, nightclub in the Tampa area. So that's why I'm going in a day early this year to, you know, just to see, you know, just to go down there. So I'm flying out tomorrow morning, which I'm kind of looking forward to. And, you know, go to the gym, check into my hotel, you know, swim for a little bit, go out to dinner tomorrow night and annoy all the locals. And then Saturday, work out again, go to the gym, swim for a little bit, go to Hogan's Beach. Annoy the locals there. And then Sunday and Monday, I'll be at the baseball games, annoying everybody I can see and trying to get on TV. Rich, hopefully, we'll get another shout out like a few years ago and we can broadcast it.
Awesome.
Hey, if you run into Keith Thurman, let's get him as a guest.
Yeah, well, I will. You know, it was a shame a couple of years ago when I was there. One of the bartenders there was a guy that I grew up with, and I got there. I was at a game on a Sunday. He goes, "It's a shame you weren't here on Friday." He's like, "Angelo Dundee was sitting in the very seat you're sitting in right now," and I'm like, "No shit." Well, and then we were interviewing Angelo's son like a year or so after Angelo passed. And they're like, "Yeah, Angelo never forgot his South Philly roots, and he always, you know, was a big Phillies fan, and always made sure to, make sure and support the team."
I forgot to mention one last story. If ever a fighter lived up to his name, this guy is one of them. Jason Mayhem Miller arrested again last Saturday after fighting with police officers. He didn't tweet it live this time, but he got arrested. Battery on a peace officer, resisting arrest, and unlawful fighting are the charges. $200,000 bail.
Ooh, and, wow.
SWAT team and everything. He just had a standoff with police not too long ago. I don't understand how this guy is not in jail.
I get the feeling this time around when your bail's six figures plus, that's it's never a good sign at all. Not too bad.
So, here's how it happened. About 11:19 p.m. on Saturday, he was causing a commotion and broke a glass inside the White House restaurant in the 300 block of South Coast Highway in Laguna Beach. So police get to the restaurant. Miller leaves through the front door and heads north on foot on the Coast Highway. He then turns around and heads south on the highway back toward the restaurant, right into a group of officers. He starts to fight with police. Four officers grappled with him, with Miller kicking and spitting before they were able to get him into a police cruiser. Now, keep in mind, some guy, I mean, obviously they're trying to round it up and roll it in with the race situation going on in the country with Ferguson and everything, but some guy just got shot in a situation like this, fighting with police in Wisconsin. Not unlike the situation, but there's four cops in this situation. I think that was the only cop in that situation that shot that kid. Four police officers grappling with this guy. And obviously they knew who he is. We've got history with him. So he continues his violent behavior when he's in the cruiser, when they finally got him in there. And he kicks the police cruiser's windows. And, you know, as I said, he's got history. He barricaded himself inside his Mission Viejo home in October, and when the sheriff's deputies went to arrest him on warrants in connection with domestic violence, stalking, and a court order violation, he ran into his house and refused to come out. And this is when he was tweeting this whole thing. And he tweeted, "If you would like to see this drama unfold, please come to," and then wrote the address. And a few hours later, the SWAT team members broke through the front door. He ran out the back door and then surrendered. And, of course, it was the first time he made the news outside of the USC when he was found sleeping naked on a couch in an Orange County church that was burglarized and vandalized, even though he never faced any formal charges on all that stuff. When they asked him what his name was, he kept saying, "Mayhem, Mayhem." They didn't know who he was. They thought he was being uncooperative.
Uh-huh.
His name really is Mayhem, and he causes a lot of it. And the guy is a total scumbag. I mean, if you read some of the stuff related to the domestic violence, it's pretty terrible stuff. I don't know what the hell is wrong with this dude, but he needs help. He needs to be in an institution. Obviously cannot handle the real world. And he's never really been quite right since he retired. I mean, I don't know if the fighting is what made him that crazy or not, but he's definitely pretty Looney Tunes. And even if it would make him even crazier. Maybe he really did need that fighting in his life as a balance or something, because he is way off a lot of ways today. Hopefully he figures it all out, gets his shit together, or knows some time and is forced to figure it out. But, not surprising that Mayhem is in trouble again. You'd think the guy with that character and that that act would be able to get into Hollywood or something, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, he's got the charisma. He's a fascinating guy to watch.
Nope. He's just he's trying to get on the news instead of on the silver screen. All right. Well, that's all we have for tonight. And next week we'll definitely have a good guest. I'll work hard to try to find somebody, or Tony will get Tex Cobb or Keith Thurman.
I'm just saying, listen, I haven't heard back from him.
Saw Tex Cobb on some old movie the other day, too. It was like a war movie. I don't even know what the hell it was called, but he was like the helicopter gunner. Tex Cobb. All right. Thanks for stopping
all
by,
right,
everybody.
Guys.
Well, a lot of places to watch this weekend. I'll be trying to keep tabs while I'm down in Florida.
Yes, sir. Let's enjoy them. And, Tony, take it easy on the way down, bud. Safe trip.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, guys. Enjoy the fights this weekend.
See you later.
Adios. Hasta la vista. Bye-bye.